This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about Star Wars The Acolyte.
Man, I've heard a lot surrounding this show, mainly because of the negativity surrounding it, like what people were saying about it on Twitter, social media, YouTube, and I was very curious to see what this show is and what's all about. I remember way back when it was at Star Wars Celebration, and Lizzie Headland was passionately talking about Star Wars, talking about the show and what it meant to her. You know, I was like, oh, great. And it was like Frozen meets Kill Bill. So yeah, I just watched the show. And honestly, everybody is just so exaggerated talking about the show, its negativity, but mainly because of sexism, but also just nitpicking at stuff. This is a mystery show, by the way. This is something that you're not fully going to get until the very end.
Yeah, it's difficult to talk about this show right now, especially, and remove it from everything that has been going on. And it's such a depressing low for Star Wars. You know, I'm a big Star Wars fan myself, and to see all these people behaving the way that they are online, it is some of the most pathetic things I have ever seen from any fandom. And it's embarrassing, it really is. And I'm sure some points will come up, but I agree with you, John. I really enjoyed this show. I think that what we have here is some of the most interesting Star Wars storytelling that we have had in a while. This is an expansion of the universe in a time 100 years before The Phantom Menace, which is so interesting, and that is so rich for storytelling. Leslie Headland and the entire team of writers, directors, everyone involved, I don't think they missed a beat, really. I think that they have made something that is extremely on the pulse of what the prequels says, of what more recent things have been saying, like the Clone Wars or even something like Ahsoka. It folds into books from canon and legends. Funnily enough, it's what a lot of people have been asking for, and those people are whining because it's made by a woman. Oh God, can you imagine such a thing? But I really think it's successful. I think this show was really great.
I really agree with you, Tom. I think the concept of the show is so interesting, and there's so many twists and turns in the show, and the concept, you know, they bring into the show is just so fascinating, as we are 100 years before everything that goes down into the Star Wars universe. And, you know, the concept of Jedi and Sith, the ideologies between them kind of like shift. It's like, how do the Jedi realize they're good, or how do the Sith realize they're doing everything? So it's like kind of blending in a way. How do you separate them? And this show really explores a flawed character who's trying to do his best, but it may lead him on this really dark path. And it's really fascinating to see that. And again, loads of people were just exaggerating and just saying, oh, there's so many not explained things. Things get explained later on the show. And honestly, here's the thing. Everybody was comparing this to the Fallout show. The Fallout show came out in a day, and you got all the access to the amazing show. You can watch it from start to end. No issues there. However, we love weekly shows and anticipate them, like what's going to happen.
Yes.
But people didn't see that. People tried to say, oh, we didn't get any explanation what happened in this episode. It's a mystery show. Again, you'll get to find out. That's the point. You're building your theories around it. What happened to these characters? It's just so frustrating. And people saying, oh, are they treating us dumb? No, we have to think. We have to think,
what?
Okay?
Are you telling me that I have to use my brain? No,
yes.
No. It's just hilarious to watch. I mean, John, you're absolutely right. Leslie Headland, from the beginning, she said, this show is a mystery, and every episode, it peels back the layers. And she couldn't have said it in a more perfect way. 7 weeks where we got these 8 episodes, every single week, those layers were being pulled back. We were learning new things, and so many questions not only were answered, but were becoming deeper, and the themes of the show of the nature of the good and the nature of power. You know, there's a line from Mother Anna Sayer in episode 3, which I think is basically the manifesto for the entire show, which is, this isn't about good or evil, it's about power and who is allowed to use it. One of the most interesting characters in the show, he says, I want want to be able to use my power in the way that I want, and the Jedi won't let me. And that is just so brilliant to unpack. We're seeing a story here where the Jedi are so very flawed. Their institution is really beginning to squeeze them. It's not about their religion. It's not about their belief. It's about their institution that's beginning to put too many rules in place, that we eventually see the downfall of that. Whereas the Sith, they are presenting this idea of freedom and emotion and being able to express yourself. That can be freeing as opposed to the Jedi, which is a bit more restrictive. I love being challenged like that. And I don't think that any point in this show, it actively says to me, oh, the Jedi are bad. It's like, no, the Jedi are just flawed. The Jedi can't always get it right. They're not saying that no Jedi has ever been good. And I think some people really misunderstood that. And it is a shame because, yeah, they'll watch something like Fallout all in a day. They'll binge it and then they'll think, oh, I've got exactly what I need. But in this, they refuse to wait. It's like in Kenobi when the Grand Inquisitor was stabbed and everyone's like, wow, this breaks canon. It's ridiculous. And if they waited just a couple of episodes, just a couple of weeks, they would have found out that's not the case at all. It's part of the story. He comes back and canon isn't broken. People just refuse to just wait.
It's very odd when people don't want to ruin the idea of the Jedi and Sith. And it's like, I agree with that. It is challenging us, the audience, to like, okay, we need to learn about the Jedi, especially in this series, which is so intriguing, and the Sith as well. So my argument is like, well, we want to understand the Sith. What is their motivations? We want to understand both sides and what they're trying to fight for. And it makes the show really intriguing.
Yeah, this show really feels like it is on the same line as the prequels. The way that it's made aesthetically, there are so many things that I think feel, especially like Phantom Menace, that blend between CGI and practical effects, which I think you really can see in that one especially. It just feel like it's of that same vein. You know, you see the Jedi Temple and you can see that Coruscant is a couple of levels lower because, you know, it's going to have a lot of expansion in the next 100 years, and you can see all of these things. And something like Andor, which I think is, you know, I mean, it's Andor. It's just the greatest thing ever. It's fair to say that that show, there's a lot of humans. It's not massively pulpy and, you know, it's not like loads of like different species of aliens like you might see in The Mandalorian or in The Clone Wars or in the prequels or, you know. But this show, you get to see so many different species and even species of Jedi. I mean, like Jekki, she's half Thielen, and we get to see Tassie Loa for one episode, who's a Zygerian. And then we get to see action from a Wookiee Jedi in the form of Kel Napka. And I think it's really interesting to have this world that feels so integrated with what George Lucas was doing in the prequels, even visually, even aesthetically. And as I said earlier, they're tying in loads of different lore aspects. Like Torbin, he took the Barash vow, which was introduced in the comics. So it's really interesting. We're seeing different kinds of Jedi and concepts that both diehard fans and casuals can enjoy. We get to see Jedi who wear temple robes and mission robes, which is straight from the High Republic. We get to see a Vector, which is what they fly in those books and comics. I think all of that stuff is really great to just kind of expand what the Jedi look like in this period, and even what the Sith look like in this period. They're kind of scrambling. They don't have any seat of power like Palpatine does in the Senate. And I love all that kind of stuff. The question is, John, where is Imer Gundai? Now, they changed Ki-Adi-Mundi's birthday. So for all we know, Nikto's going to live a long time. So let's see him in season 2. Return of the King, the legend of having team up with other characters. The legend that is Imer Gundai. He could be in it. Just believe it, John. Believe it.
Okay. Well, that is a crazy theory right there, Tom. I mean, Imer Gundai could appear. But yeah, I'm really happy for that because I don't have like an expansive knowledge about Star Wars like you, but you read the books. And what I really liked was the detail about the show, how they go through with the Jedi and then with the costume design as well. But one thing that I absolutely love was throughout the show, I was like, this feels very familiar in a very good way, this kind of tone to it. And then what you texted me the other day, Tom, you said Leslie Headland was inspired by Cowboy Bebop. And I was like, that makes sense. That makes so much sense. There was this vibe where Cowboy Bebop has this episodic feel, because Acolyte does feel episodic in terms of like a mystery. You're trying to find out what it is. And Cowboy Bebop does that really well with the opening arc and story, we follow Spike. And I was just really happy to find that out, because I was just like, this feels really familiar. You know, how they've done that with the characters as well in the story, like Yord and Jekki. So it's just really exciting to see where the director can, you know, use inspirations into Star Wars as well. I mean, George Lucas was influenced by Seven Samurai, the films that came out in the 50s, Westerns as well. And it's just so fascinating to see that. And I wish there was more projects that can use inspirations from anime or films or, you know, music to put into there. And that just really made me excited. I was like, she's got taste. Oh my God. I'm just like, she my God, a legend who acknowledges Cowboy Bebop into Star Wars. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Great. I mean, yeah. Like, I am praying that this show gets renewed for season 2. She has a story to tell. It's going to expand. We'll get into spoilers now because I'm already struggling to not say, but we're going to see Plagueis. We got him briefly in episode 8. We're going to see more of Plagueis. We're going to see his rise to power. We're going to see the Sith continue. Leslie has that story to tell. I really hope they renew it. But even if they don't, I think she's such a unique voice and such a talented voice. It would be a waste not to do more with her. So I hope we do see more. There's some really interesting interviews with her on Collider, where she kind of unpacks a lot of the stuff in episodes, I think 6, 7, and 8. So I think 3 interviews with Maggie Lovett. And it's really interesting just to see her process. And she talks about, this might have been my only chance to do Star Wars. So I was going to put everything into it. I was going to just go the whole way. And you can see someone like Saul, much like Spike in Cowboy Bebop, is the tragic figure who is so consumed by the past. And what I loved so much about this show was the structure and the way that we get the first 2 episodes. It's like episode 1 Jedi dies, episode 2 another Jedi dies, episode 3 we begin to fold in the flashbacks. If I had a major criticism of this show, it would be 8 episodes wasn't enough. I think 10 or 12, much like Andor, the episodes would be a bit longer. I do think there are things that we could have had fleshed out a little bit more, but I really liked how we did get to see those flashbacks, and it added so many different, it's like a Rashomon thing, right, where we get to see a different perspective on what you already know, and it really paints these Jedi in a different light.
Yeah, and I love stories that tell a different perspective. And it's just so fascinating when stories do that, because it's like you place a character somewhere in time and then it's like, okay, what happened to that? You know, why is that so important? And then you go back before that point and it makes it more emotional or makes it more intense. And it's just so fascinating to see how it all unfolds. Like episode 7 is brilliant to see a different perspective on that. And that's why mysteries should be all about seeing different perspectives. And it's all about show not tell, and they've done that so well. I really like it. It's just like there has this sort of tragicness when it comes to like the different perspective. It's like, oh my God, that happened. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, you can see Saul just break down. Episode 4 and 5, especially with the encounter of the stranger and the death of all the Jedi. I mean, Jeki and Yord getting dispatched in such a devastating way.
It's crazy.
It's why I wish there were more episodes, because imagine if we had another episode to really get to know them a little bit more. I mean, it's brilliant to see the fandom latch on to them, especially Yord. I mean, Yord Horde. It is brilliant to see that nobody is safe in this show, and to see Saul begin to unravel, and he gets more and more desperate, and yet he is adamant that he did the right thing. He's adamant that barging into the witch's coven under this guise of nobility, under this guise of doing the right thing, that he truly believes, and him doing all that and killing Mother Anaseia in front of Mei, he never even apologizes at the end. He still doubles down and says that he was right. And you know, this is somebody who is continuously pushed to the edge, and to see him then, his legacy be turned into, instead of just this caring man, this master who made mistakes, it was, you know, that he went rogue and that he went kind of crazy. And it's really difficult, I think, at the end to see his whole legacy be twisted like that, and to see Venestra have to do that to her friend. That's really interesting to see the levels that the Jedi will go to cover up their own mistakes as an institution.
Yeah, it's just so fascinating to see all of that with such a flawed character who we try to understand, and it just becomes more and more tragic on the way. He's like, he thinks he's doing the right thing, and he knows to himself he's on the cusp of like, I need this, I need to prove that I'm doing something right. And I think he is the most intriguing character in the show. And again, yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's like that tragic character who constantly looks back into the past, like Spike from Cowboy Bebop. Yeah, and I wish we could have seen more from the characters like Yord, and get to see more of that with the pacing. But what I really loved, the action sequences, the lightsaber duels, the one against all the Jedi's against the stranger, that was insane levels. I loved the cinematography, how it handled it all. It literally made it so smooth, engaging. I just felt completely lost into the fight in a really good way. I was like, whoa, I was just so fascinated by it. It was just so many things that was happening, and it definitely just felt like nothing was safe in the show. I saw many social media pages doing like recreations of Star Wars fights with the lightsabers, and it just looked really fun. So yeah, I'm just really glad that sparked that idea of lightsaber fights. Should be really crazy fun, but also really sad because we lost Jackie Njord.
You watch episode 4, and at the end you get the brilliant reveal of the stranger, and you see that all the Jedi are going to go off it. And on the internet, it was everyone saying, okay, who's going to die? And everyone's like, well, obviously our main characters are going to be fine. And we were so wrong, like, to see Jackie get Swiss cheesed like that, and to see Yord then, like, even after we've experienced Jackie, to have Yord snap neck just like that is brutal, and to have them both really challenge, you know, that moment when Sol says she was a child and the stranger says you brought her here. And it's like, yeah, the Jedi bringing children into battle, we unpack that a little bit with Ahsoka. But to see a child who doesn't get to survive, who doesn't get to live on to be this Grandmaster, who just dies in the most brutal way, or even Yord, who is always a rule follower, and he is so confused by the stranger because his way of fighting doesn't follow the rules. None of it does. He has cortosis on his arm, on his helmet. He's deactivating lightsabers left and right, and Yord doesn't understand it or any of it, and he just makes the decision to come back. And for what? He dies. Like, I think it's so, so beautiful. That whole episode, it was captivating. It's some of the best lightsaber choreography we've seen in years. Like, it really does rival the prequels, and that whole episode pushes ideologies and the characters in so many different ways. As I said earlier, with the whole, like, I want to be able to wield my power in any way I want, or when Sol says, what kind of master hides his face from his pupil, and the stranger says, you tell me. Or when he says, I've accepted my darkness, what have you done with yours? Really interesting. That episode was so brilliant. And the stunt choreographer, who is Lu Junchang, just amazing. They set out to rival the prequels, and they did. I think that this absolutely would be among the conversation for some of the best duels. And I think the structure of the show, it retains the kind of sanctity of a Star Wars duel. You know, in a film, you get like maybe like one or two duels, three or four at maximum, in something like Revenge of the Sith. And that's the event. Like, that's the bit that you play on repeat as a kid. And then it doesn't disappoint. You know, it's like Duel of the Fates, or Luke versus Vader, or Kylo and Rey versus the Praetorian Guards. We all love a duel, and it has weight in both the story and like the structure. And I think this show really makes its duels feel like an event. We get action throughout, but episodes 5, 7, and 8, that's when it's like, okay, this is our big lightsaber duel. It's not just like we're having a little skirmish. It's like, no, we're gonna deliver for these major events. And, you know, things like seeing Kel Naka, a Wookiee Jedi, just go absolutely crazy on Torbin and Sol, or the final duel in the courtyard. I just think it was all so brilliant.
Yeah, the set pieces are just incredible just to see that. And Kanaka as well is just so cool to see a Wookiee Jedi. And throughout the show, I think the cast is just brilliant. They did their roles really well. And I gotta say, the guy who plays Sol, Lee Jong-jae, he learned English for the show. What an absolute mad lad. He is brilliant. A legend. I can really tell how dedicated he was. And I gotta say, that must have been really difficult for him to learn in such a short amount of time. But it is brilliant for him to be there and playing Sol. I gotta say, he played Sol in such a brilliant way. He was just this struggling character who couldn't leave the past. And then the sound design. I love the sound design for the stranger. The stranger's noise from the helmet. It has this distorted voice, and it just speaks Sith on so many levels as well. And it's just so cool just to see that and how it plays out as well. But yeah, I really love the cast. The cast did their job, and I gotta applaud that. It was pretty cool.
Absolutely, yeah. Applause is necessary. I agree. I think the cast were just phenomenal and so perfect. As you say, Lee Jong-jae, his warmth in the first half and then his desperation and eventual tragedy. You know, his moment of death where he says to Osha as she's choking him, and he just says, it's okay, and I did it because I loved you. And like, that's so heartbreaking. And, you know, I just think all of them. Amanda Stenberg, just like playing twins so effectively. She plays Mei and Osha so differently.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant to see their switch as Mei begins to rediscover her love she has for Osha. An element of the show I would have liked to see a little bit more of that. I feel like Mei, unfortunately, did get a little bit less to do. Again, give us two more episodes, really get into that. But, you know, we see Osha, especially in episodes 6 and 8, her struggle with the darkness and her struggle with, you know, wanting to express her emotions and grappling with the truth. All really interesting. interesting. And obviously we've talked about Yord. Charlie Barnett is so lovable. Like the moment where he's steaming his robes and he's like, oh, he's like, and then you get Daphne Keane as Jackie and the greatest line in cinema where she just goes, Yord, put your clothes on. Just brilliant. A way to make those two characters so brilliant. And then, you know,
please just give us more episodes. It's just the pacing that just ruins the 8-episode thing. Like,
for sure.
Please, in the future, don't have 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Give us 26 episodes. Like what Cowboy Bebop does.
I'm hoping that if season 2 happens, they go for 10 or 12 or something like that. Because I think like more. And hopefully in season 2, we get some flashbacks and we get to see more from the dead characters. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
I know it's a fan dream. But I want to say that probably the best actor. I mean, they're every single character who shows up. We got Carrie Ann Moss. We got Dean Charles Chapman. Mm. We got Jodie Turner Smith. We got Rebecca Henderson. We got Jonas Wasamo coming back, playing another Wookiee. We've got David Harewood playing Senator Raincourt. Brilliant. But Manny Jacinto as the Stranger. Holy crap. What a performance. His like bumbling, quirky persona as Chimer is delightful. But then the way that he is so scary and pretty sexy as the Stranger. Like, you know, everything he says to Osha about desire and truth. And, you know, as I said earlier, everything that he says to challenge Sol in episode 5, it's just brilliant.
A brilliant character to bring into the show and really challenges the Jedi ideology. And I think that is a really brilliant device for these characters to understand where they are. And for the twins aspect, for the story, for the Stranger, it's a really interesting conflict for them. It's like one of the twins doesn't want to be with the Stranger, but one of the twins do. Osha wants to be a Jedi, but then that leads on to being a Sith at the very end of the episode, wants to be trained by the Stranger. But the twins aspect is really interesting because the twist is that Mother Anasea created them and put one consciousness into two people. So it is that really interesting concept where they could be together and then become really powerful. But yeah, I think that's a brilliant point to go through their different personalities into that. And then the fight, when they fight each other, you really get to see that they're literally one person and, you know, doing the same movement, the same fight moves. And it's just so, so brilliant how they've done that with the foreshadowing, you know, with the build up from there. But then the ending just does it really well. It's just like, this is her path. She doesn't want to be a Jedi. She wants to be a Sith. And you get to see it throughout the show. She was like, I failed to be a Jedi. But Sol failed to be a teacher. He was just constantly obsessed of making things right and proving he can do things for his loved ones. But then as you explore throughout the show, it was him to be this really flawed character. And I think that's just a brilliant way to explore the show like that.
Yeah, it's as I said earlier, the nobility that Sol believes he has or needs to have, that's what is his downfall. There's a moment in episode 7, even though I think the pacing of the flashbacks is a little bit off, I really enjoyed episode 7 because you get to see the Jedi and what they did and all of these things all done under whatever intentions. And there's a moment when Indara says, I want my Padawan Torbin to learn things for himself. I don't want to be spoon feeding him everything. And Sol's like, oh, I think you should be. And she's like, well, you know, that's why you don't have a Padawan, you know, because he's not right for it. And I think that's really interesting. And yeah, like that fight where we're match cutting between Mei and Osha fighting and the Stranger and Sol fighting.
Mm.
It's all really, really compelling stuff. And I love the exploration of their power. And we're beginning to see through these kind of experiments that make people like Mei and Osha the kind of thing that would make Anakin. And no, the presence of Mei and Osha as this force created being does not undo Anakin. Anakin is the immaculate conception. The will of the force made him. You know, Mother Anasea made Mei and Osha. Leslie Headland even said that their power combined doesn't even come close to Anakin. And some people saying that this show ruins Anakin's legacy is so stupid.
It's 100 years before.
Yeah, exactly. They're not even around when Anakin's alive.
It's not going to change anything at all. That's insane.
I know. And I thought for sure, like at the beginning of the show, I thought that the mystery of the season would be who's killing the Jedi and is Osha guilty? Shock reveal, she's a twin. But I'm honestly so glad that wasn't the case. You know, the audience is smarter than that. And Leslie Headland knows that we're not idiots. So they didn't even pretend like the twins thing is a mystery. And I was really thankful that immediately they let that play out. And actually, the mystery of the season is, what did the Jedi do that would ripple out this badly? What did they do in Brendok? And also, you know, the identity of the stranger and why he does what he does. I think they really play with the mysteries and your own expectations really well. It reminds me of The Last Jedi, you know? Stuff like this and Andor make me excited and interested about Star Wars and what there is to say about it in so many brilliant ways. And all the people who are complaining so much about things like the lightsaber bleeding at the end and Ki-Adi Mundi's birthday, it is just pathetic.
I swear, somewhere in Star Wars, there was a blue lightsaber that turned into red somewhere in Star Wars beforehand.
Maybe you're thinking of Visions. They do it in one of the
Perhaps.
Visions.
Yes.
But like
right.
bleeding, we've seen that in the comics. We saw it in Jedi Survivor. Oh, yeah. It's because she's touching the crystal. That's why Anakin's lightsaber doesn't do it. You know, a lot of people really get angry at that, but don't get angry at the bleeding. You're missing the fact that
the bigger picture.
Yeah, she's using the very weapon that Sol handed to her as a gift, as a moment of, this is who you can be, and I'm giving you a chance to realize your dreams. And she's in the exact same position and she is holding that saber as she kills him, and he's kneeling down just like he was when they met. I think it's beautiful and calls back to what he says in episode one, maybe, where he says, our memories are lessons. I think that is really on point and really fantastic. So The Acolyte, what are you going to give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it a solid 8.
I agree. 8 out of 10. Give us a couple more episodes for season 2, please. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review. If you think we're worthy, and next week we're doing Deadpool and Wolverine. There are a lot rides on this film. Marvel Phase 5, Deadpool, X-Men, Wolverine. And you can send us an email at outoftimefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Friday, so let us know your thoughts on Deadpool and Wolverine by then, and we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
I can't wait for Deadpool and Wolverine, and you can follow us on Instagram at outoftimefilmpod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Aswell, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts, and you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. James May for the excellent theme, and Ron Phillips for the vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Take what you can.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.